Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Erevin Daf Chavav. This is the last daf of the second parak of Maseches Erevin. Today's share is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. It's also sponsored by Ron Markovitz, who's a chusur for Shalema, for Shmuel Yochanan ben Shimshon David Shavar for Shalema, so Shar Chole Yisrael. It's also sponsored by Jeremy Herskowitz, Le'ilin Nishmas, his grandfather's yard site, Marvin Herskowitz, Moshe Yehuda ben Yosef, Alev Hashalom, and Hashem Hashem and Aliyah. We thank all of the sponsors very much for the sponsorship. We are holding four lines from the end of the page on Daf Chaf Hey Amud Beis by Yahu Ab Varnika, and the Gemara is going to discuss a machlokas, but really a shita of Rava with regard to an Ab Varnika, which is an area inside of a pardes where they would build like a little hut to keep things in middle of a pardes, and whether that requires a tikkun or not. Are you now allowed to carry in that pardes because that's called a dira when you have an Abvarnika in the Pardes? So we're going to have this discussion between where Rava has a particular psak about this issue, and then the Gemara is going to have three challenges to Rava on that psak, and at the end of the day, Rava is going to have to change his mind as a result of those challenges to his psak. And then the rest of the daf is going to go back to discuss the three things that Rabbi Elai heard from Rabbi Eliezer that we mentioned in the Mishnah. So there were three different Piskei Halacha that Rabbi Elai, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer, claims to have heard from Rabbi Eliezer, but he acknowledged that when he looked for all the other Talmidim of Rabbi Eliezer to see if they heard the same thing, none of them heard the same thing. He was the only one that carried on these particular Mesoras from Rabbi Eliezer, so we're going to discuss each one, the first two in great detail, and then the third one in not such great detail, and that will bring us all the way to the end of the Perek Be'ezras Hashem. So let's begin. Hahu Abvarnika. So there was this Abvarnika, which is like a hut, or like a sukkah type of structure, that's in the middle of a pardes, and the wealthy people would use it as a place to keep things that they would need when they're hanging out in the pardes, when they're enjoying their time in the pardes. So the Havale, the Reish Galusa, had such an Abvarnika. So Bikustine in his pardes, and the pardes was bigger than a Beis Hasayim. It was not Hukaf Ladira, so it was a Karpef that was Yosrim Beis Hasayim, not Hukaf Ladira. So fundamentally, it should have been Osir to be Metaltel in that pardes. But Amale, the Ravuna Bar Chinna, the Reish Galusa, said to Ravuna Bar Chinna, he went to his rabbi and he said to him, on Erev Shabbos, Liavin Martakanta, I want you to do something to the Mach. I would like to have my Shabbos meal there tomorrow. I looked at the forecast. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. I'd rather eat out in the pardes. I'd rather eat out there. But obviously, I'm going to need to bring the su'uda from my house to there. And I need to be able to carry all of my su'uda and my kelim on Shabbos. Nahama means bread, but very often bread is the ikra su'uda. So that's why we refer to Nahama, we refer to the entire su'uda as Nahama. So he says, I want to eat my bread, but I want my entire suda there. I mean, there are things I'm going to need to bring. So I want you to figure it out. How am I going to be allowed to carry there? So Asal Avid Kana Kana Pachas Mishlosha. So what he came up with, Rav Huna Bar Chinna came up with the plan, is he made a path from the entrance of the house to the Abvarnika with a fence on each side, but it wasn't an actual fence. It was a bunch of poles that were set up less than three tvachim apart from each other, utilizing lavud, and that path was not bigger than Beis Hasayim, and therefore he's allowed to be metaltel in that newly fenced in area, which is pachas mi Beis Hasayim. So Azal Rava then went the next day and shalfinu, and he took down, or not the next day, maybe on that day, he took down all of these poles, and he thought they were unnecessary. That since you have the Abvarnika in the Pardes already, the Abvarnika is a Beis Dira, and that therefore transforms the entire Pardes into a place that's Hukaf Ladira. So even though it's larger than Beis Hasayim, as we know, when something is larger than Beis Hasayim, if it's Hukaf Ladira, it's okay. So he thought Hukaf Ladira doesn't only mean to build a fence around the entire area L'shem Dira, but even to make a dira inside of there is considered, to make a structure l'shem dira inside of the pardes is enough to transform the entire area to an area that's hukaf l'dira. So that's why Rava thought that these makeshift fences were necessary. So he took them down. Azul Rav Papa Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua Naktinu Mivasrei, and Rav Huna Rav Papa Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua picked up those those reeds after Rava took them out of the ground in order that Rav Huna Bar Chinuna should not be able to put them back. So not only did they take down the fence, they then removed it. So they really took a strong stance that this is totally unnecessary. It's an unnecessary chumrah, and therefore they removed the entire tikkun. So now the Gemara is going to have three challenges to this psak of Rava. This psak of Rava that it's totally mutter, it's hukaf ladira. You don't have to worry about anything. You can carry there without any sort of tikkun. So the machar the next day on Shabbos when they wanted to go eat in the avarnika, Esve Ravina Rava, Ravina challenges Rava and he says, how could you be matir to carry in such a pardes because of the avarnika without making some sort of mechitza? We have a brisa when it comes to measuring the tchum Shabbos in a city that's surrounded by a wall, but the yishuv of the city does not go all the way up until the wall. Imagine you have a wall around a very large area, but only in a certain portion of what's surrounded are there actual houses. The houses only go up until a certain point, and then you have a lot of empty space till you get to the wall. How do you measure Tchum Shabbos? You measure the Tchum Shabbos from the walls of the city, because that defines the city, and by Tchum we view the entire city as Dalet Amos, or do you measure Tchum Shabbos by the last houses in the city, and measure 2,000 Amos from the last houses, even though that's quite a distance from the walls of the city? So the Braisa tells us that if you have an Ir Chadosha, if you have a new city, Modad Olam Yeshivasa, you measure from the place where there are actual houses there. But V'yashana, if it's an old city, Mechomasa, then you measure from the walls of the city. So Ezu Chadosha, Ezu Yeshana, why does it matter the age of the city, a new city, an old city? What is this talking about? So the Gemara explains, no, it doesn't mean a new city or an old city. It means Chadosha Shukful B'Sof Yashva. Chadosha means that the walls were made first, and then the houses were built. That before they did anything, they were makif choma around the whole city, and then they built houses inside of the city. So therefore, the walls are not considered the walls of the city to make the entire area inside the walls kedalet amos, because those walls preceded the city. So those aren't city walls; they're just walls that happen to have been built, and therefore the city is going to be defined by the houses in the city. Whereas Yeshana, an old city, means Yashal B'Sof Ukva, that they built houses and then they wanted to secure the area, so they built fences around, they built walls around the entire city, and that's considered to be a walled city, that's considered to be walls that belong to the city, and therefore in such a case you would measure from the walls. V'hainami, so this pardes also where you build the Abvarnika inside of it after they already made the mechitzos around the pardes, Kukval B'Sof Yashvadami, that's similar to a city that had a wall around it, and then you built all of the houses, where that wall has nothing to do with the houses. It doesn't does not make it that the entire area inside the walls is like Dalet Amos, so that you can measure Tchum Shabbos from the wall. So over here also, by the Pardes, they had these walls before they built the Abvarnika, so that doesn't make the entire Pardes as if it's Mukaf Ladira. Once you build the Abvarnika, the Abvarnika is not going to change the status of the larger walls around the entire area, and therefore, how could you be Matir to be metaltal to carry in such a pardes on account of the Abvarnika? That was the challenge that Ravina had to Rava. Based on this brisa, you see that if the walls precede that which is built inside of it, the fundamental nature of those walls does not change when you then subsequently build something inside of it, whether it be a city or whether it be a pardes. And therefore, this did require some sort of tikkun. The entire area cannot be just labeled as something that was hukaf ledira. The Me'iri writes that when it comes to batei arichoma, it needs to be that it's hukaf l'besof yashav, and it's different than Shabbos. When it comes to halachas of batei arichoma, which have different halachos in terms of being poda and going back at Yovel, so that is or not going back at Yovel, that has to be something where the walls were there first and then the yishuv was built inside those walls. And he explains that when it comes to batei arichoma, there's a gzeres hakasuv, and the pashas of the pasuk says v'ish ki yimkar beis moshav ir choma, that it was mukav choma and then yashvu bo, then they dwelled in it. Whereas Shabbos, you need a makom that's mukav l'shem diurim, that the hekif is made, the walls are made for the sake of the diurim, in order for it to be considered, in order for it to be considered hukaf l'dira. So it's different gedarim for different halachos, even though both of them require walls. But what's required in order for those walls to be considered helpful is different for these two different halachos. The Rashba just points out that the kasha of Ravina is from a new city, that even though the hekif of the city was made al das to build the houses, meaning we said a new city means that their walls were always there, and then you built the houses. So the walls really have nothing to do with the houses. So you're going to measure the Tchum Shabbos from the houses, not from the walls. Says the Rashba, what if they do have something to do with the houses? What if they were planning the city and the first thing they built are the walls, and then they built that, but the whole time they were building the walls, they were thinking, we're doing this so that we can build homes inside of these walls. So the Rashba writes that even so, it has a din of hukaf al-basof pasach, or hukaf al-basof yashav, where you do not measure from the walls, you only measure from the houses. That's the sheet of the Rashba. The Rambam seems to disagree. The Rambam, the 16th parak of Hilchos Shabbos, says that it's good enough that it was hugadar l'shem dira, that you built the fences for the sake of dira. It doesn't have to be that there was a dira there at the time that you built the fences. That's how the Magid Mishnah explains the Rambam, because the Rambam's lashon is makom shehukaf shelo l'shem dira in parts papirz yisrael las ramos begov asar tvachem begadav l'shem dira. Meaning he talks about how to be misakein if it was hukaf shelo l'shem dira. So it says the Magid Mishnah, you see clearly from the Rambam that if it were l'shem dira, that would be good enough against the sheet of the Rashba. The Mishnah Berurah and some Mishnah Chesiv Kognitas paskins that even those who hold that when you are chashav livnos a heck of l'shem dira, that alone doesn't work. There'd be moda that if at the time that you built the heck, if you had a machshava to build a house there or to be poseach a pesach there, and then you built it and you actually did build a house and actually were poseach a pesach, then it's considered hukaf l'dira. Meaning the Mishnah Berurah sort of compromises between the two shitos. It's one thing to have hukaf l'shem dira alone. That's not good enough. But if you're makif l'shem dira, and then you actually build the diros, so once you actually build the diros and you follow through on that plan, so you see that the plan, when at the time that you were makif l'shem dira, was legitimate, it was serious, that you then actually followed through and did something about it, and you built something in there, then for sure that would be considered an area that's hukaf l'dira. That's how the Mishnah Berurah Paskin says, especially since the Rambam holds that hukaf l'shem dira is good enough. So certainly when you actually follow through, it would for sure be good enough. So that was challenge number one to Rava. So again, the story was that Rava, with the aid of Rav Huna, Rav Papa, and Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua, took down these walls. There's no need for any sort of tikkun. So challenge number one was from Ravina. Interestingly, challenges number two and three were from the people who were helping Rava carry out this operation. Samalei Rav Papa, Rava. Rav Papa challenges Rava now. He's going to ask a kasha on Rava, and the Rishonim point out what is going on over here, Rav Papa, and the next one is going to be Vamar Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua L'Rava. Is going to be Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua challenging Rava. So Rashi points out that even though these were the people that were helping him the previous day on Erev Shabbos, that at that time that Rava was Oker the Kadim, they thought that Rava was correct, but then they realized that they were incorrect. That they realized that it seemed to be a mistake, so they started asking on Rava. The Ritva writes that after Ravina asked on Rava, Rava already changed his mind, and Rava realized that he was incorrect, and that's what caused Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua to think that maybe that there are additional kashas on the original psak as well, that originally they were willing to follow whatever Rava said, but once Rava himself changed his mind, they started to think more openly about this psak, and they realized that there are other problems here as well. So Rav Papa challenges Rava, how could you allow being metaltal in a paradise because of the avarnika, that's considered a dira? V'amar avasi mechitzos adruchalim. If you have mechitzos that are made in order to create shade while you're building, so they wanted to create some shade so they wouldn't bake out in the sun while people were building, lo shma mechitza, that's not considered a mechitza for the sake of dira. Alma kiven delitzniusa avidla, since it's made just to cover that area from the sun in order to not really to live in there, lo avi mechitza, then it's not called a mechitza. Hachanami. So over here also, by the Varnika, given the Snusa Avida, since it's made just so that they shouldn't be exposed to whoever's watching from the outside, whoever happens to be walking by, but they don't typically use that area to eat and to do normal Dira-related things. They just want some privacy once in a while when they're in their yard. Lo avi mechitza. That's not enough to be considered a mechitza. So therefore, if you have a pardes that's surrounded by mechitzos, it's not called mukaf ladira, just because there's an abvarnika in there. The abvarnika, even if you want to call it, that's called building new walls. But it's not called building walls l'shem dira. You're only building those walls l'tzniusa. And anytime the walls are only there l'tzniusa, that doesn't do it. That's not called mukaf ladira. The Ritva writes that Rav Papa is also maskim to Ravi. Kasha, it's just that he's adding additional kashas on Rava, that even if you want to say that the mechitzas that are asuyas ladira, that are made inside of a makam that's hukaf ladira, is considered to be a makam that is enough to elevate the entire area to a makam that's mukaf ladira, but the avarnika is not considered a makam that's asuy ladira in the first place. Even the avarnika walls are not really hukaf ladira, they're only there litzniusa bialma, and a mechitza litzniusa is not a mechitza. Is that so obvious that a mechitza l'tzniusa is not considered a mechitza? So this is a discussion when it comes to other areas of halacha. Do we consider a mechitza that's made only l'tzniusa bi'alma, that's made only for the sake of tznius, to be a valid mechitza? The Prichadash writes in the name of the Marikash that if people get up to daven and there were 9 mispalulim in one place and a 10th guy that was standing on the other side of a curtain, and that they were poreis litznius, that they set up that curtain just litznius be'alma, so they're mitztarif. And the Prichadish says you can bring a raya from the Gemara Masechas Zvachim, because Gemara in Zvachim says that if you have a curtain, that's considered like a Pesach Pasuach. And the Prichadish says that it's mistaver that we don't view we only view the curtain as a Pesach when they were poreis the curtain litznius be'alma. But if there was tefillin or sefer Torah and they spread this curtain in order to make an actual mechitza, so that a person could go to the bathroom and not disrespect the tefillin or something like that, meaning it's coming for some halachic function. The mechitza is coming for some halachic function. So since it's considered a mechitza, klape the tefillin, it's considered a mechitza as far as a tziruf of asara for a minyan as well, and therefore they would not be mitztarif in such a case. So you can have the same physical structure, but depending on what the intention of putting up that structure is, it may have the status of a mechitza or may not have the status of a mechitza, which begs the question, what about a mechitza in a shul? How do we consider a mechitza in a shul? Is that called a mechitza that is a halachic mechitza, that is matir something? Or is that litznius bialma? On the one hand, you're not allowed to daven in a shul doesn't have a mechitza, right? Even though that halacha does not appear in Shulchan Aruch, it's one of the more curious things that was omitted from Shulchan Aruch. There's a whole list of halachas that were omitted from Shulchan Aruch. Magen Avraham has a list in Siman Kuf Mem Vav of halachas that were omitted. Doesn't say you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara in Shulchan Aruch. The Chafetz Chaim taught us that all of Shas and Post can tell us that you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. So of course you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. So there are a lot of things that it doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch, but that are still halachos. So it doesn't say it anywhere in Shulchan Aruch, but we know that you're not allowed. So in some sense, it's being matir. But on the other hand, why is it being matir? It's an issue of tznius, meaning the point is that it's the tznius of bialma. So in halacha, we generally consider a mechitza that they put up just to daven as a mechitza of tznius of bialma, not a halachic mechitza. And that's why you're allowed to, if you have like a makeshift mechitza, you could set it up on Shabbos in a shul. It's not called that you're building an awal arai, that you're building a structure on Shabbos. So we generally view that, and that's why it doesn't have to necessarily fit all the halachic requirements of what a mechitza is. Let's say gedi and bokenbo at the bottom, like a small animal could fit underneath it because it's a hanging curtain or something, so that's not going to be a problem when it comes to a mechitza in a shul, although it would be a problem when it comes to a mechitza as HaShabbos. So that's what we generally consider it to be litznius bialma. So chaps a big nafkamina in terms of tziruf la'asara, in terms of being mitzareif to a minyan. Yet sometimes you have a mechitza that may be there, the reason they structured the building in such a way was so that they could have a women's section in a mechitza, but it's become a permanent structure. structure. It is a permanent. It's not one of those. It's not a movable mechitza. It's built into the building. If that's the case, then it's a real mechitza. Then it's a real wall. Then you can't really be mitzaref to a minion. So that's the question. Rav Henkin writes in a tshuva that Meikar Adin, women are allowed. Rav Moshe also alludes to this in tshuva that women can say kaddish. That if a woman wants to say kaddish, that there's no problem with a woman, there's no halachic issue with a woman saying kaddish. So Rav Moshe says it used to be the minhag in Europe that Rav Moshe brings a raya that only one, if you have only one or two women around when men are davening, that you don't need a mechitza for just one woman, which is presuming that she's dressed sneezing and everything, that you don't need a mechitza for just one or two women. He says because they used to be like you'd be davening at a shachris minyan, and in Europe it used to be that a woman who was an ani would come collecting tzedakah in the shul, or would sit in the back of the shul to say kaddish. That would happen. That would happen from time to time. Now it would be scandalous, right? But that used to happen from time to time. So the Rav Shechter points out, yeah, that may be true. But if they're standing in the women's section and there's an actual permanent mechitza, then it's not going to be mitzdarif, and they would have to come into the men's section in order to recite the kaddish, unless you have a shul that had, like we have over here in this temporary location, where the mechitza is brought in and brought out, and it's that would not be a problem. Then they would be mitzdarif. So sometimes the mechitza, the tzniusa, is not considered a mechitza for some areas of halacha. Okay, now the third challenge. Rav Unabridu of Yeshua challenges Rava in a third way. How could you allow to be metaltal in the pardes that has the abvarnika in it? If you have a mechitza, it's meant just to guard certain items that you place inside those mechitzos, but not to live inside those mechitzos. Lo shma mechitza. That's not considered a mechitza. So to make it considered hukaf ledira. So and I'll bring you a raya. The Rabbi Bar Ravua ma'ariv lekula mechuza. He used to make an eruv for the entire city of mechuza so that they could carry within the city, but Arsiyasa, he didn't make one eruv for the whole city. Neighborhood by neighborhood, he would paskin that for each of them in your mavoi, make a shituve mavuos, so that in your neighborhood people can carry from one chatzar to another chatzar. But he would not make a single eruv for the entire city that can go from one shchuna to the next. Why? Mishum tpira de beituri, because they would have something that was a depression in the ground, something that was dug in the ground, where they would put date seeds for the oxen to eat. And they're in the mavuos, and that was located between the mavuos, between the neighborhoods. So those mavuos were mafulash to the entire length of the city, and it's separated between the neighborhoods. So that's what prevented Rabbi Bar Ravua from making a singular eruv in the entire city, because there was not a wall that would be mitzarif all of the mavuos to make it into a single city. And even though they made mechitzos at the edges of those mavuos to guard over these garine hatamarim, these seeds, these date seeds, that's asuy l'nachas. Those mechitzos are only meant to guard something. They're not meant for someone to live there. And therefore, that's not considered hukaf l'dira. V'apirat debeturi, and the mechitza that they made at the edges of those mavuos where they had these things in the ground where they would put these date seeds, that's considered a mechitza that's meant to guard something inside of a hekif, because it was made to guard the date seeds. And Rabbi Bar Ravua would not rely on such mechitzos in order to combine the entire city. So too, any mechitza asuya l'nachas is not going to change the area into an area that's mukaf l'dira. So that's a kasha on Rava, because the abvarnika is not a base dira. It's mechitza asuya l'nachas. It was a place where they would keep things. They would keep some clothing. They would keep a few items there, but they wouldn't hang out inside the abvarnika. And therefore, it certainly is not going to change the entire pardes into an area that's hukaf l'dira. So that's the third and final challenge to Rava. Rava couldn't come up with any answer to these challenges, and therefore he changed his mind and he said, "You're right. The pardes, it's also to be metaltal in the pardes, and I shouldn't have taken down those poles." But Kari Elai Reish Galusa, the Reish Galusa said about Rav Papa and Rav Hunder Bar Yeshua, he applied to them a pasuk that it says in Yirmiyahu Parak Dalid, Chachamim heima lahara ulehetiv lo yada'u. They're big chachamim when they want to work against me, but to help me out, they didn't know what to do. Meaning, I yesterday when it was Erev Shabbos and I looked for a tikkun and I said, I went to the rabbis in advance and I said, do me a favor, figure out a way that I should be able to carry. So these guys, Rav Papa and Rav Hunder Bar Yeshua, they destroyed that tikkun and they said, it's not necessary, you don't need it. And now comes time where I actually want to have my meal. Now they're telling me that it's a halachic problem. So now they're big chacham. Now they're telling me that I can't do it. But really, it would have been much more helpful if yesterday, when I was looking for a tikkun, they would have thought of all of this then. Okay, so that's the end of the first sugya. Now we move on to the three things that Rabbi Elai heard from Rabbi Eliezer, and no one else seemed to have heard from Rabbi Eliezer. So I'm Rabbi Elai. Shemati mi Rabbi Eliezer. I heard from Rabbi Eliezer of afil beis kor. So what did he hear from Rabbi Eliezer? That if you have a gina or a karpef that's not hukaf ledira, you're allowed to be metaltal in it, even if it's huge, even if it's a base core. You can plant a core of tavua there. It's much larger than base asayin. So the Gemara brings something else that they said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. Masnis, in our Mishnah, where Rabbi Eliezer claims that Rabbi Eliezer holds that you're allowed to be metaltal in a gina or a karpef that's not hukaf ledira, when it's the size of a base core, is delo kechananya, is against Hananya's understanding of Rabbi Eliezer. Titania, Hananya Omer, Hananya said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, I feel we are boim saw kastrat yeshal melech, that if you have a gina that's not hukaf ledira, you can be metaltal in it, even if it's our boim saw, that's like the area behind the king's palace where the king would take walks. And our Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Lai, Rabbi Eliezer was only matir up until a base core. A base core is 30 sa'a, but you see, Hananya held that Rabbi Eliezer was even matir up until 40 sa'a. Some Rabbi Yochanan shnei a mikra echadarshu. They both Rabbi Eloi and Rabbi Hananya, both of their versions of what Rabbi Eliezer held are based on the same pasuk. Shenemar, the pasuk describes when Yishayo and Avi went to visit Chizkiyo HaMelech. When Chizkiyo HaMelech got sick, it says Vayi Yishayo lo yatsa chatzar hatichona, and the pasuk says Dvar Hashem haye elav lemar, meaning that before the Yishayo went to the inner chatzar, which is the rechava behind the house of Chizkiyo, which is not mukaf ledira, he already had the Dvar Hashem. He already spoke to the Ribbono Shel Ksiv ha'ir v'karinan chatzar. There's a kriyan ksiv in the pasuk. It says in written ha'ir, but the way we're supposed to read it is chatzar. Mikan the strat yishal melech shoy kayoros beinonios, from the fact that it is a chatzar as far as the melech is concerned, but we call it an ear also, so we see that we treat the strat yishal melech like average sized city. So from the fact that it calls it a chatzar, even though it's as big as a city and it's not mukaf ledira, you see as far as Hilchos Shabbos that even a place that's as large as a city that's not mukaf ledira, you're allowed to be metaltal in it like a chatzar. So b'maikam ifgi, so what's the machlok between Rabbi Eloi and Hananya? So Marsava Rabbi Eloi holds Ayoros Benonios Havion base core, that Ayoros Benonios are 30 sin, are a base core, and that's why any place that's a base core, you can learn from that pasuk, could have a din of a chatzar if it's hukaf ledira. Marsava and Hananya held Arbaim Sahavion. They're just arguing what the size of an average city is, but you see from that pasuk that the size of an average city is the size of an area that you're allowed to be makif ledira. Yishayo, my boy Hassam, asked the Gemara just parenthetically, once we're talking about Yishayo's visit, the Yishayo's visit to Chizkiyo, so what was he doing there? Why was he at the Rechava that's behind Chizkiyo's house? That's not the entrance and exit of the house, that's just a place where the king would be metayel. So Amir Abba Rechanam, Rabbi Yochum, Lamit Shechol Chizkiyo Valuch Yishayo V'yoshev Yeshiva Al Pischo. That what happened was that Chizkiyo got sick, so the proper thing to do when someone gets sick is you set up a yeshiva al pischo, and the Zechus HaTorah is meant to protect him from the Melech HaMavas. This, of course, brings to mind the Agadah in Masech HaShabbos, where the Gemara tells us that when David HaMelech knew that the Melech HaMavas was going to come to attack him, so what did he do? He was all sick in Torah, because the Torah protects one from the Melech HaMavas. So that's why, when someone gets sick, so they're a Moshev Yeshiva, that they dafka go and they learn Torah. Mikal, the Talmud Chacham Shechala, so if Talmud Chacham gets sick, particularly Talmud Chacham, Moshev and Yeshiva al pischo. They put a yeshiva by his Pesach in order to protect from the Melech HaMavas. Says Gemara, V'lav Milsi. But really, it's not true. I mean, you can't learn from here that your Moshev Yeshiva al Pischo when the Talmud Chacham gets sick, because Dil Ma'asi L'Gruy Be'Satan. Maybe when the Melech HaMavas sees that they're not allowing him when the Malach HaMavet is going to see that they're preventing him from coming in, he's going to attack those Talmidei Chachamim that are on the outside that are learning over there. So maybe it's not a great idea to sort of taunt the Malach HaMavet. But that's what the Gemara said, that whether you can learn it from here or not, that's apparently what they would do, is that they would be Moshe Yeshiva whenever there was a Talmud Chacham that would that would get sick. So the question is, why dafka by the Rechava? Why dafka by the back door? So the Marsha says, apparently they had a tradition that that's where the Malach HaMavet would come in. That he'd always come in through the back door. That he wouldn't come in through the front door. There's the Gemara Masechet Baba Kama tells us that Rava would close the windows at a Shas Tzara, because the pasuk says Ki Olam Mavis Bechaloneinu. So apparently Rava held that the Malach HaMavet comes in through the windows. So that's an interesting idea that there's a particular location through which the Malach HaMavet comes. You would think it doesn't matter, just learn Torah, it's close that person, but apparently the Achronim are concerned about a particular location where the Malach HaMavet might come. Rav Yosef Engel and Gilyon Yashas points out, quotes from Rimi Gash, that three people is called the yeshiva, because three people is considered a rabbin. So whenever there's no rabbin, there's no yeshiva, that's just considered like a chavrusa. So what does it mean, yeshiva and yeshiva al kivro? So Rav Zilberstein has a shayla in Chashukei Chemed, where a man died and he left some money, and he said he would like his yorshim, who have all of his money, to establish a yeshiva. So they want to know how little can they get away with, right? How selective could their admission policy be? So the Rimi Gash held that three people is already considered a yeshiva. V'chein shamati amenu. And then the second thing that Rabbi Lai heard from Rabbi Eliezer that no one else seemed to hear, anshei chatzar shachecha v'lo irev beso asr, that if people who live in a chatzar, one guy forgot to participate in the eruv, his house is asr to bring things in and out from, for him to bring things in and out of. The other b'nei chatzar are allowed to bring things in and out of his house. So you see, the other b'nei chatzar are allowed to. Vatanan asked the Gemara, but wait a second, we're going to have a Mishnah later in this Masechta that if a person did not participate in the Eruv with all the other b'nei chatzar, and he instead is mevatel his reshus to them, beso asr lo tilachmus lo vilahen, both he and they are not allowed to take things in and out of his house. So isn't that a stira? We're saying in our Mishnah that others are allowed to take in and out of his house. Some of that's not a stira. Ha Rabbi Eliezer, ha Rabbanan. When Rabbi Eliezer says in our Mishnah that the other Bnei Achatz are allowed to take things in and out, that's Rabbi Eliezer's Shita. Whereas when the Mishnah is going to tell us later on that nobody's allowed to take things in and out of his house, that's the Rabbanan's Shita. Kishatimtzi lomar ledivrei Rabbi Eliezer mvatal rishos chatzero rishos beso bitel. The Rabbanan mvatal rishos chatzero rishos beso lo bitel. Meaning the point is that every resident of that chatzar has some portion of the chatzar. A guy who didn't participate in the Erev needs to be mevatel his portion. He's mevatel his rishus. So what do we assume he's being mevatel? Only his portion in the chatzar, or also his house? He's being mevatel his entire house. So according to Rabbi Elazar, if he's mevatel rishus chatzero, he's also being mevatel his house. So the house also becomes jointly owned by everybody else, and that's why other people are allowed to take things in and out of his house. Whereas according to the Rabbanan, no! He's being mevatel his rishus in the chatzar. He's not being mevatel his house, and therefore nobody's allowed to take things in and out of his house, because that's a privately owned separate area. So says Mar Pshita, it's a davar pashut that the machlokas Rabbi Elazar and the Rabbanan is about that. Why does Rav Sheshes have to say that they're arguing about whether he's mevatel his bais? Obviously, that's what they're arguing about. So Amar Rechava anav Rav Huna Bar Chinna Targimna lo nitzucha ella lechamisha shashurim bechatzar echad v'shach echad min v'lo iriv. That if you have five people that are in the same chatzar, one of them did not participate in the iriv. L'divrei Rabbi Eliezer k'shu mevatel reshuso einu tzarech levatel lekol echad ve'echad. That Rabbi Eliezer would hold when you're mevatel rishus, you don't have to be mevatel beferish to each of the other members of the chatzar. If you're mevatel to one of them, then we assume that when you're being mevatel ba'ayin yafe, and we assume you're maximizing your bittel. So if you're mevatel to one of them, you're mevatel to all of them, and you don't have to say it explicitly. But the Rabbanan, according to the Rabbanan, who hold that when you're mevatel your chatzar, you're not being mevatel your bias, apparently they hold that when you're mevatel, you're ba'ayin rafe. You're being mevatel in the stingiest way possible. You're not just being as giving as you can be. And therefore, so when you're mevatel your rishus, you need to explicitly say that it's for each and every other member of the chatzer. Meaning, it's obvious that Rabbi Lezer and the Rabbanan are arguing when a person is mevatel his rishus, does he also mean to be mevatel his house? But the chiddush in formulating it is to let us know that it's a broader machlokas. It's a machlokas in general. When you're being mevatel rishus, are you being mevatel ba'ayin yafe or ba'ayin ra'a? And if we assume it's ba'ayin yafe, it has other ramifications. Namely, when there are multiple people, you need to be mevatel too. So if it's ba'ayin yafe, you don't have to say that explicitly. It's understood that it's for everybody. If it's ba'ayin ra'a, then it's very limited. It's only for the people that you explicitly are being mevatel to. So k'mano zo d'tanya, who does the following b'raisa follow? Chamish shurim b'chatzar echad b'shach echad me'ev lo'ir v'kshu mevatel rishuso. Ein sarich levatel rishus kol echad ve'echad. Bryce says you don't have to be mevatel to everybody. Come on, Rabbi Eliezer. That's like Rabbi Eliezer, who says we naturally assume you're being mevatel ba'ayin yafa. You don't have to mention it beferish. Rav Kahana Masliyachi. Rav Kahana taught it the following way. The same way the way the Gemara. I'm not the following way. Rav Kahana taught the way we quoted up until now. But Rav Tevumi Masliyachi. Rav Tevumi taught it a little bit differently. That Rav Sheshes himself is the one that said that the price is talking about the five people in Chatzar Echad, that price is like Rabbi Eliezer. The way we had it was that it wasn't Rav Sheshes himself who said it. So Kaman al Zad Tanya Chamish Shurim b'Chatzar Echad v'Shach Echad Mevleir of Kshu Mevatel Rishus Ein Shach Mevatel Rishus L'Kol Echad V'Echad. That when you Mevatel Rishus, that price that said you have to be Mevatel to everybody. Kaman, who's that going like Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Amar Rav Sheshes Kaman K'Rabbi Eliezer. That it was Rav Sheshes who had said that follows Rabbi Eliezer. Same thing. Though it's just a matter of who said it. But the point is that Rabbi Eliezer holds that in general, when you're mevatel rishus, you're not doing it as generously as possible, and therefore you need to explicitly say that it's still called echad v'echad. Whereas according to the Chachamim, when you're being mevatel rishus, according to Rabbi Eliezer, when you're being mevatel rishus, you're doing it as generously as possible, and therefore you don't have to be mevatel kol echad v'echad, but according to the Rabbanan, you're not doing it as generously as possible, and therefore you need to be mevatel kol echad ve'echad. So I'm the Rabbi Abaye, the Rabbi Eliezer, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that if you're mevatel rishus in your chatzar, that is even matter your bias, because you're being totally generous. Amar lo maftilna. What if you say, what if you explicitly say, I'm not being mevatel my bias? So ul Rabbanan, amar maftilna. And according to the Rabbanan, who say that you generally are doing it pa'ayin ra'a, and you're not being, what if you say, I am being mevatel my bias? My, what's the din then? Meaning, is this something that is an automatic, that whenever a person is mevatel rishus, there's a machlok, sablos, and the Rabbanan, whether his house is included or not? Or is it really up to the person to decide whether he wants his house to be included or not? So says the Gemara, time with Rabbi Elazar, what's the shayla? With the first shayla is as follows. Time with Rabbi Elazar, mishum teksav mevatel rishus, kaser rishus, beisel bitel, vahai omar, anol lamavtilna. Do we say that? No, Rabbi Elazar's whole reason to assume that a person is being generous is because that's the assumption. But if a guy says he's not being generous, then we have to take him at his word. Or is Rabbi Lezer saying that fundamentally the way people live is no one has a bias without a chatzer? So if a person is going to give up his chatzer, by definition he means to give up his bias as well. And when he says I'm not being mevatel, he doesn't have the capacity to do that because it's not called a dwelling place anymore. It's not called the place that someone would live. And Avgav Damar Dayarna, Lav Klum Kamar. And even though he says, no, I'll live in a bayis without a chatzer, we could ignore that. It's just something that's so fundamentally against the way people normally live. Ul Rabbanan, and the Shaila within the sheet of the Rabbanan, who hold that Mivatel Chatzera, you don't have to be Mivatel your bayis. What if he says he is being Mivatel's house? So what are the two studs in that Shaila? Time of the Rabbanan, Mishim Dixavri, and Vatel Rishus Chatzero, Rishus based on low bitel, is it just an assumption that the Rabbanan are making? That if you're mevatel your chatzer, you're not being mevatel your bias? V'hayomer mevtilna. But if it's just an assumption, this guy is telling you, I am being mevatel my bias. Or maybe it's something more universal. Time the Rabbanan mishum d'lavid in ishtim salik nafshe legamri mi bias v'chatzer. Or do the Rabbanan work with the assumption that universally, no one wants to totally be mesalik themselves from their bias and their chatzer? V'avi kiorech Shaykh the Gabayu and to become a guest in his own home. And if this guy says, I am being mevatel my bias, he doesn't really mean it. It's batel daito, etzel das kaladam. He's going against what is totally natural for everybody else. So therefore, we would not listen to it at all. So the question is, Rabbi Elazar and Rabban, do they leave any leeway for the person to determine himself whether he wants to be mevatel his bias? Or do we say, no, these are rules? The Rabbi Elazar assumes that automatically you are being mevatel your bias, and the Rabban assume that you're automatically not being mevatel your bias. And again, nafkamina is, can other people in the chatzar carry things in and out of his house? Amaleis, baye, response to Papa, bein the Rabbanan, bein the Rabbi Eliezer, kivan de gali daite gali. That if a person is megaladas of exactly what he intends to be mevatel, you have to take him at his word. You assume that that's in fact what he means. That if he says he's being mevatel his bias as well, he is being mevatel his bias as well. And then finally, the third thing that Rabbi Eli heard from Rabbi Eliezer that no one else seemed to have heard, v'chein shamati mimenu, I also heard sheyotzim ba'ar kablin b'pesach, that you could be yotze, the mitzvah of marar, using our kablin, which is a type of bitter item to eat, on Pesach. The halacha is that when there's no Karban Pesach, we eat only mar. But in the Torah, the din midaraisa is that mar is eaten al matzos mar miyochluhu. They eat the Karban Pesach with matzo mar. But what qualifies as a vegetable for mar is a Mishnah Maseches Pesachim lists off five vegetables that qualify for the mitzvah of maror, but some of them, the identity is not so clear. And then if you can't find any of those vegetables, you can maybe use kol davar mar, and some of them are a category that may be like lettuce, right? What kinds of lettuce? Is it only romaine lettuce, other kinds of lettuce? And that's the ideal one to use. So I heard from Rabbi Eliezer that our kablin is perfectly mutter. Mayar kablin, what is that? Amar Reish Lakish, atzvasa charuziyasa. It's that which grows around the palm tree and has apparently a bitter taste. It has a tam marar, and therefore it's perfectly good to use for marar. That's the discussion, whether horseradish is one of the items on the list. And so we know that Jews used it for centuries. So the question is, if it's not one of the items on the list in the Mishnah, how could it be that Jews used such an item for centuries? So it could be that they used it because it is one of the items on the list, or it could be that that they used it because it was the most bitter thing they were able to find. And when you can't find one of the items on the list, then you're supposed to use whatever has a tam. Okay, a discussion for a different time. Tomorrow we'll begin the third parak of Masechta Arevin.